like Shakespeare, but with lots more punching. It's like Goethe, but with lots more crunching. Like Titanic, but the boat's still floating. No, it's not! The motherfucker is exploding!
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. Part-timefanboy.com.
Yeah. All right. We are here. We are here on the podcast. Are we ready to begin? Shall we begin?
Sure.
One second. I'm looking up Next Wave because for the life of me, I cannot remember the characters.
Come on.
You are slacker.
Slacker.
I'm bad with names.
I'm going to start reading it as we're talking.
Yeah. Read this. I don't want to get into it, but yeah.
Welcome to the reading of Next Wave, Marvel's Next Wave.
Yeah.
The audiobook of Marvel's Next Wave. No, that's what we are here to discuss. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I am on the line with my good friends, Corey Blake, and the spoiling the podcast subject early, Liad Goldberg. We are here to chat. We are doing a Part-Time Fanboy book club. We have not done one of these in a while. It's been a while since we talked about a graphic novel or a comic other than the Fantastic Four sort of read-throughs that we do every once in a while. And I had been at a free comic book day event at Collector's Paradise in Winnetka, California, and I was looking through some books there and I came across Next Wave, and the owner recommended Next Wave to me and said it was like one of his favorite books that he'd ever read. And I had heard about Next Wave before in the past, and I don't think I'd ever read the whole thing. So I was like, I posted on my personal Facebook page, hey, look it, I'm gonna read Next Wave. And then Corey was like, oh, I've never read that. And I was like, oh, well, then we should do a podcast about it. And Corey was like, that's a good idea. And then I was like, who else wants to join in? And Liad was like, let's do that. So, yeah, that's how this all kind of came to be.
That's the origin story.
Yes, that is the Next Wave Part-Time Fanboy Podcast origin story. I guess this is like a very highly sort of regarded book, right?
I remember when it was coming out, everyone was just talking, seemed like everyone was talking about it. This came out in 2006.
Oh, wow. I didn't even look up the date. Good for you.
So I remember this being a big deal at the time. I was meant to read it. And so, yeah, this is like perfect opportunity. I have my Marvel Unlimited subscription, so they have it up there. And so that's how I read it.
Nice.
I actually read it when it came out and was really into it at the time. I think I had, I don't, the crowd that I was around, it had mixed reviews. Some people really liked it, and then some people did not. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but that's just my little circle kind of thing, not general public. Don't know
sure,
what that was.
Sure. Well, and I'm interested to talk to you too, because I think that you did you pull out your old comics, Liad, or like you had read it when it was coming out? So
yeah, I actually have the issues. Like
that's
I have
amazing.
Yeah, so it's cool. Unfortunately, cool. I could not pull them out at the time because I was in California, so I actually read them online.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, but you read it as it was coming out.
Yes, I did.
And for me, I remember reading. Picking up the first issue, because this we should say it's by Warren Ellis and Stuart Immonen, artist Stuart Immonen, and Warren Ellis, the sort of creator of many, like, you know, cutting edge books throughout the years. It's funny because I always mix up Warren Ellis with Garth Ennis. I always like confuse them. And but, you know, among other things, The Authority, stuff like, oh, what's the book I'm trying to think of? I'm looking at his thing right now.
The book I always think of when I think of him, which is not his biggest book by any means, but I just always think of it because I liked it a lot, was Fell.
Oh, I never read that.
Yeah, it's really good. It was kind of a weird, not weird, but I mean, it was just a different format at the time. It was a little like cheaper priced, single issues, but had more. The way they kind of structured it, it was like meant to have more story. So it was like a denser read. There was another book that came out around the same time that was sort of following that same model. And, anyway, yeah, that's kind of the book I always think of when
I was thinking of, and it just came up for me, and I can't believe I blanked on Planetary, which fantastic. Yes. I absolutely love Planetary. And I actually love The Authority. What's that?
I said, I'm a little biased. I think of Castlevania.
Yeah, that's right. Liad is a storyboard artist on that show, or works for the company that puts it out, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Works for the company that puts it out. So gotcha. He's one of the he's like the main writer or producer on it. So
And he also did another series that I absolutely loved called Global Frequency, which is less well known, but it's fantastic. And there was actually a pilot that was produced for Global Frequency a long time ago. And I remember seeing it and thinking like, oh man, it's too bad they did not make a series out of this. But in any case, yeah, I mean, Warren Ellis is sort of like known for like breaking conventional sort of like comic book tropes and stuff like that. So I think that was the reason for the excitement when this first came out, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think what put him on the map originally was Transmetropolitan. Derek Robertson. And so, he definitely has like buzz around him. And so, yeah, I think it was like exciting that he was doing a Marvel book like this.
Yeah. Have you ever read Transmetropolitan? Because I know that Paul Edwards, who's on this podcast occasionally, like he absolutely loves it. And he actually got me a copy of like the first couple of issues or like the first, it was like a small, like little trade of like the first couple issues. And I think he got it signed for me like a long time ago. And Transmetropolitan was never anything that I fully like dived into or got into. And, have either of you ever read that series or were you into that book?
Unfortunately, no. I have a friend that has the book and it like gushes over how good it is, but I never did.
I gotta read that. I almost said Planetary, but Transmetropolitan. But so I think that this was there was a big level of excitement for this book. And I remember picking up the first issue and reading the first issue and being like, and it's like Fing Fang Foom is in it, like a giant, you know, and it's kind of like jokey and stuff like that. But I remember reading it the very first time and being like, you know, and sort of like not picking up an issue after the first issue. I was like, you know, the big joke was like at the end of the book was like Fing Fang Foom is a dragon that wears underpants. You know what I mean? And that's sort of like the ongoing joke, like what if Godzilla wore underwear or something like that. Right. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, because a lot of these guys are, you know, Warren Ellis, Garth Ennis, like these guys are brilliant writers, but sometimes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm totally interjecting and I do apologize, but
you're being rude, but go ahead.
I know, but it totally was nagging at me. And I'm like, Warren Ellis. And I remembered he actually has created one of my favorite little trade paperbacks graphic novel, I think trades, called Desolation Jones.
Best
artists on it too. Just, I had to find a place to put that in. So I'm sorry, I totally ruined your flow, but that one's a little a little gem that like most people don't know about. So
yeah. I believe I've read that a while ago. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. It's funny. But what I was kind of trying to say is like they make brilliant stuff, and then sometimes there's stuff that comes across as a little juvenile. Like, you know what I mean? Like when they're sort of just like aiming for the humor. And I think I read the first issue of Next Wave and I was like, okay. Like, right. You know, I wanted something maybe a little deeper, or I was used to him making something sort of like, more, I guess deeper is the word, or like with depth, you know. And to me, the first issue seemed kind of shallow of this book, but I guess that's sort of what it's aiming for, right?
I mean, that's what it comes across as, that's for sure.
What do you think, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, I think it's sort of meant to be, like a romp. Like it's supposed to be just a high adventure sort of, you know, action comedy. And I think mostly I think Mike sort of, one of my takeaways was that Warren Ellis wrote it as a spotlight for Stuart Immonen to just, have fun and just draw bonkers stuff.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. I mean, there's even a...
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's kind of how I read it, and I enjoyed it. Like I had a blast, but there's even a moment where they kind of joke at, we got close to some character development there. You know, like I think it's just supposed to be like a visual spectacle.
Well, I think also that, I mean, it was very enjoyable for sure. I really liked the series, but I think also it was kind of poking fun at just how, absurd comics really are. A lot of comics really are. And just the whole concept is just, so ridiculous when you really like think about it, kind of thing. And the fact that in comics there's a lot of this, second act only kind of thing, because there's, the characters have to stay roughly the same for, decades kind of thing. So I think, those two things combined, like they're making fun of it, but doing it in a very fun way, like very enjoyable way.
I agree. But I didn't take it as mean-spirited either. Like I think they are lampooning, superhero comics conventions, but I, sort of affectionately so is how I take it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you mentioned Stuart Immonen, who is the artist on this. And that was one of the things because, look, I'll be honest, I read and I still do read a lot of comics because of the art. Like, and it doesn't have to be like super amazing, dense art or whatever. I like cartoony art. I like all different kinds of art. But I remember picking up Next Wave, the first issue, and being a little disappointed because Immonen wasn't playing with his usual style. He usually uses like a lot of shadows and, depth to his figures and stuff like this. And this was like him playing like with a completely different style. And I remember being kind of shocked because he had drawn like a lot of Superman books, and, he's also done a lot of like, Avengers and Star Wars. I mean, the guy's been around the block, but at the time I sort of knew him for Superman, and he was almost like, I don't want to say like he was like a better sort of like Adam Hughes, you know what I'm saying? And in the fact that he just didn't draw like TNA girls, he drew like, all kinds of superheroes and stuff like that. Not to disparage Adam Hughes because he's amazing, but he's an amazing artist, but like Immonen draws comic books, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and sort of hasn't, limited himself to cover art and stuff like that, but he does, his characters are usually like, there's a lot of shadows, there's a lot of details. And in this one, I very specifically remember looking forward to picking up this book and seeing that he was working in a different style completely. I mean, I'm looking at his work on the internet right now, and this book is very different than anything else he's ever done. And being kind of like shocked by it and thinking like, why is he doing this? You know what I mean?
See, I came at it not knowing Stewart's work before, and I don't generally go for the very cartoony look, but his stuff in Next Wave is cartoony, and it's got a bit of an edge to it, too. And, I mean, it's very angular and sharp, so it doesn't feel cartoony, like goofy, you know what I mean? Even when goofy stuff happens, it doesn't feel like it. And so it really, for me, it really worked well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying it didn't work. It just kind of like threw me off when I first read it.
Sure, no, for sure. If I'd come to the book thinking Jim Lee had done it and I got that, I'd be like, what the heck is going on?
What the heck is this? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was, and you know, to just throw something out there, Corey, are you still with us?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Immonen also, what's really funny is Corey and I play a role-playing game together called Villains of Vigilantes, and I believe, I didn't have a chance to look it up, that he worked on some of those early modules like Villains of Vigilantes and in the 80s, and his style is completely different. It's like, wow, he's really come a long way. And so when I remember picking this up and being like, it's not like his Villains of Vigilante stuff, but it is in a way, and the fact that there are, you know, there's a lot less, you know, playing with shadows, playing with a dimension, playing with, you know, form and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I just remember being shocked and sort of being like, huh, this isn't the Stuart Immonen that I was crazy about on Superman. But reading the book now, I mean, it's really great because it also seems to have like freed him up a bit. You know what I'm saying? To like have a lot of like crazy action, do a lot of like fun things. And, you know, as I read the book, I was just like, I'm wondering why. And I mean, if anybody out there knows, you know, send me an email or whatever, or if you've ever read about it, but I'm wondering like why he decided to play with this style and why he never stuck with it. Because it also seems like a style that might be easier to sort of work in than what he usually does. Does that make any sense?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's still dynamic. It's still really fast paced. It's got tons of energy to it, but it is a lot of these sort of like inner shapes. They're just not as sort of molded as what I'm used to seeing by him. As the book goes on, you see a little bit more of like what his usual style is, but I'm just fascinated with like, what did he do? You know, like, why did he, did he just want to change things up for a series, or was this something that they were trying to get through quickly, or, you know, I don't know, but the book doesn't suffer for it either, you know?
Yeah, I know that around, I think soon after this, he and his wife, I assume it's his wife, Catherine, did a couple projects together, like one of them through Boom Studios. I'm trying to find the other one, but the one I'm seeing right now is that Never As Bad As You Think. And the other one I think I have, but I can't remember the title of it. But anyway, you know, non-superhero, but and I think they kind of continued in this style, but you know, I mean, Christian, you have a better eye for art and observations about it than I do. But, you know, it is, I mean, it's an interesting question. I don't know. Like I remember it coming out and then I think there was a little bit of lateness, and I remember there being some coverage about it. And so I think, you know, they wanted to make sure that it was the same creative team that finished the whole thing. So they weren't going to do any fill-ins and things like that. Yeah, I mean, it's great questions. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your thoughts, Liad, rereading it, you know, like revisiting it after all these years? Because I mean, like Corey said, I mean, it's like 10, 11 years old, this series.
Right.
How do you feel like, particularly because, you know, you're a storyboard artist, you're an artist, you're well-versed in film, you know, and stuff like that. Looking at this sort of thing, how did it play out for you the second time around?
It was interesting because the second time around, I felt like some of the things that I really, like some of the jokes and some of the tropes and stuff like that, I feel like didn't age as well, or that rather a ton of people have used similar stuff since. So it really, some of the jokes really lacked, you know, like the freshness that I guess used to have or had when it first came out. And there was a few jokes here and there that I'm like, I don't know if today this plays as well as it used to. But nothing horrible, just a few things where you're like, you know, that did, I don't know. I wouldn't have put that in now. But relatively minor stuff, you know. And it's really more shows how much certain cultural things have progressed in a positive way. So, you know, good.
Sure.
Other than that, though, I mean, I love the art and I love the story. Storytelling. It did feel rushed at the end. I feel like they probably had a I think they had to like wrap up the story sooner than they expected. At least that's how it felt. But you know, other than that, I really liked it.
Yeah. Corey, how did it play for you? You're sort of like a new reader like me to this book. How did you feel about the series, you know, reading it for the first time?
Yeah, I think it has a great energy to it, and it's a lot of fun. I can see, you know, Liat, I think it makes a good point that some of the comedy of it, the bits of it, I can see that they probably were, that was really fresh at the time. And to me, it felt like very much like this kind of paved the way for series that have followed, like you know, the Squirrel Girl you know, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and things like that, where it's like just being very irreverent with superhero sort of stories and conventions, but still, like, you know, celebrating this, the goofiness and weirdness of comics, which, you know, is like part of what makes superhero comics so great, is that it's just sometimes it's so bonkers. And, you know, and just acknowledging that, and so yeah, it definitely felt like, oh, this really paved the way for those. And you know, the downside of being the sort of the trailblazer is that in retrospect it doesn't seem as fresh as it was at the time. But it was still a lot of fun. I agree, the story, like, it was just a very clean, here's the premise, here's our objective, very very kind of video game premise, you know, got to get through the bosses and then you know, which is fun. You know, it's appropriate for sequential, you know, for serialized storytelling. I noticed too that it had a very like two part kind of, you know, issue one, cliffhanger, resolution, issue two, next challenge, cliffhanger, resolution, and that it followed that throughout. And I think, you know, makes sense. 2006 would have been around the time the graphic novel sort of market in bookstores was really starting to find itself. And so wouldn't be surprised if they certainly plotted it for that purpose. You know, yeah, I mean, I think really does come down to, like, the art is just a blast. What was it? Issue 11, I think.
Yeah.
Where those series of two page splashes is just wonderful.
The Elvis MODOKs killed me on that. I was like, oh my god. It was just a great cornucopia of ideas over those. It's interesting that you mention Squirrel Girl, because it's really, I mean my daughter is a huge fan of that book, and I was reading this, and to me the irony was just amazing, because this is a action adventure book that is definitely sort of geared towards a slightly older audience. But as I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, this did sort of like set the groundwork for something like Squirrel Girl, which, you know, is a crazy adventure comic, that you know, doesn't take itself too seriously, and the characters are really wacky, and the sort of main characters are not necessarily constrained by, are not confined by the same things that the rest of, like, sort of the Marvel universe are, you know what I mean? Their adventures are, like, bigger and crazier and just wackier. I've read not as much Squirrel Girl as my daughter has, but I've read some of it, and I was just taken aback by how much of an influence this sort of had on that sort of thing, and other sort of like comics that are geared towards like teens or younger kids, you know, comics that are very much sort of like oriented towards maybe even female readership, or, you know what I'm saying? Or that have less of a tinge of like toxic masculinity. But this one, but Next Wave doesn't sort of has that. Like Next Wave, like very much sort of has like a frat boy kind of sense of humor feel about it. And I think that's done on purpose. You know what I mean? And it's just hysterical to me how something like this, just, you know, developed, or, you know, I mean, I don't know how much the creators of Squirrel Girl or the editors of Squirrel Girl or books like that, looked at something like Next Wave or were influenced by something like Next Wave and were like, oh, we should kind of do something like that. Or we should look at this as sort of a signpost of, you know, doing something crazy, because who's going to take something like Squirrel Girl, like, as a serious comic book, you know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I found just like jaw dropping while I was reading it. I was like, oh wow, this really did influence like, the way that sort of Marvel comics would go. Marvel, I think, more than DC, right? And it really influences a lot of like the way that the YA, you know, younger, young adult, like younger readers books would go. Like that's the thing that blows the back of my mind out, because I was like, I could, like, tone wise, you know, I could just be reading an issue of Squirrel.
Now that you mention it, this is slightly reminding me of the animated show, not the current one, I think the older Teen Titans.
Oh yeah, you mean not Teen Titans Go, right? The other one?
I think the other one, not Go. I think the one before that.
Sure.
Yeah, they definitely had more seriousness to it, but there was a few times where, like, totally wacky kind of thing, you know, and so. I don't know. I can kind of see it, you know what I mean, type of thing. Because when you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, that is for a younger audience.
Yeah.
I'm like, I kind of see that a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is like, I think that, you know, I don't know if Warren Ellis or Garth Ennis is the one that said that he hates superheroes, you know what I mean? But the thing that I liked about this is, you know, there was a period of time where these creators were making things like The Authority and Planetary and stuff like that, and you definitely got a feel, like an undertone of like, superheroes suck, you know what I mean? They're just dumb, and, you know, why do you guys like this sort of thing, and that. And I don't think that Next Wave delves into that, you know what I mean? I think Next Wave is very much like, it is sort of like, look at how kind of dopey this is, but the dopiness is sort of like the great part of it. You know what I mean? Like the people in tights and stuff like that. And the fighting.
And it's also the fun. That's where the fun is. So like, this is ridiculous and fun. Like, it's the combination of the two.
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely is fun. And it doesn't, you know, I love how the characters don't take each other seriously. I love like Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau. So, or I think she might've been called Pulsar at this point or something like that. You know, and I love how she's always being like, you know, I was with the Avengers when I led the Avengers, when I was the Avengers leader, you know, and yeah, I remember really loving the Machine Man miniseries in the 80s that was done, and thinking that that character was cool. And then they sort of take that character and sort of like kind of make him the butt of the joke during the whole series. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they're all sort of, you know, these like cast off characters, and I think they're all sort of, mocked and yet celebrated at the same time. I think if it was more ridicule, the knowledge of their history would not have been there. Mm-hmm. But you can tell in the jesting, you know, in the sort of silly things that are mentioned, that, you know, they're actually referencing very specific things from their history.
Little flashbacks in that they keep doing it throughout the series of the characters.
The fact that they know all of Tabitha's code names is like you remembered Meltdown? Wow, okay. You
know. Well, it's funny, I'm flipping through the book, and the one sequence that I really love is like where they're talking about Machine Man and the Celestials. You are a total, you know, bleep, you know what I mean? And they're like basically kicking him out, and it's like, oh my God. Yeah. There's a lot of that, like that sort of fun stuff that's like sort of picking these people apart. What did you guys think of? Well, I mean, you know, to talk a little bit about the plot, but like Next Wave, the series is called Next Wave Agents of Hate, technically. I read it in the trade. I got the complete collection. And basically it's about a group of sort of like superhero type people who are working for an organization, and they discover that that organization is basically funding the terrorists that they're supposed to fight, correct?
No, right. The terrorists are funding them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Sorry. Mistake. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so then they decide that what they're going to do is dismantle the terrorist organization, and it leads them through a series of missions, because what they found a list, correct?
Yeah, there was like this marketing document that apparently goes through each of their weapons of mass destruction or something. And there was some other term, and so they're just kind of going down the list, eliminating everything that's supposed to be this crazy invention that's, you know, supposed to be tested on humanity or some small city or something like that to wipe out humanity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really funny how I remember the original Bloodstone, but I had never heard of his daughter. And I remember looking, because she's in this series, I remember sort of like looking for her comics like on eBay and being like, oh, I wonder if I can find. First of all, they're going for a mint on eBay. It's like a 4-issue miniseries or something. Like that's all she ever was. And it's very much drawn like one of those Image sort of TNA books from like the 90s, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so to take that character and, you know, completely change it and put it over on its head, I just feel like, how obscure did a character have to be for him to sort of pull them into this, you know?
Well, the funny thing is, I don't think I was really familiar with any of these characters when I started reading the book.
Yeah.
You know, that's really the case. Like, they're all very, you know, super obscure. You know, I mean, I may have come across them here or there, but like didn't remember them or didn't know who they were, kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I love the bits at the end where, I mean, it's funny because it seems like, because Ellis created the Authority, correct?
I think so.
Yeah. And then, whatchamacallit, Mark Millar took it over, correct? Mark Millar took
that
it over.
Right.
And then there's all these like little bits of like taking digs at Mark Millar. And I'm wondering, is this all like sort of good natured or, you know, like I love the scene at the end, which is directly, not at the end, but towards the end, where Bloodstone is, you know, has the European Union sort of like flag on her chest. Yeah. And, you know, it's very much calling out the Authority, where it's like, you know, Captain America's like, what, that sort of iconic messed up scene where he's like, what do you think this letter stands for, France? And he's like putting it. But then in this book, she has the European Union flag symbol on her chest. And she's like, do you think that this letter stands for America? Like, there's a lot of like little things in here where it seems like he's taking digs at Mark Millar's authority, which is another series I would love to sort of like revisit for this, you know, book club sort of thing.
Yeah, there's one of the covers towards the end is like a Civil War. So Civil War, yeah. The Civil War event was coming out at the time. And so they had a very specific branding of that, of all those tie-in issues. And so that, yeah, they have the branding, but then there's basically, they're basically saying like, we're not participating. And yeah. And somebody's holding a sign with Mark Miller. And it says something. It actually, I heard that they like had to edit it a little bit because it looked like it said that, you know, something worse than what it was actually saying, which was already bad enough. But anyway, yeah. So I did. Yeah. There, I don't know if it's good natured or I assume it is, but who, you know, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of your thoughts on the leader of the organization that is, I'm looking at the Elvis Modocs right now. That's just hysterical. the leader of the organization, what's his name? Dirk
Anger.
Yeah, obviously sort of a stand-in for like Nick Fury or something like that.
Oh, for sure.
A whole lot more mental problems and issues that he has to deal with.
Yeah, I wondered if this was, you know, I mean, the, you know, Hate, Dirk, even the Beyond Corporation is like, you know, isn't that like
the Beyond
Corporation or something like that?
Oh, okay.
We wondered how much of the sort of antagonists of the book were changed and, you know, maybe originally pitched as actually Nick Fury and actually S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is absolutely a Nick Fury stand-in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, he's just ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the series. Every once in a while, I felt sometimes it went, not too far as in like, oh, I'm offended, but just like the humor got a little too goofy
sure.
and too like detached from its own reality. And I felt like, you know, towards the end when he hangs himself and then the next issue he's a zombie. I was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, that was just
go ahead, Liad, because I got something to say about that too.
No, it just, I felt like maybe just that part was just like I said, it's towards the end. So I think that part was just a little rushed because you're like, wait, what just happened? Kind of thing. Like, it definitely had that moment.
See, for me, I read that and I was very much like, oh, this is such a great commentary on how they just won't let characters like die. Like they won't they just will milk a character until it's just like a zombie of itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like something like Wolverine, right? Like where it's just like, you know, like we are just going to keep this character going and going and going and, you know, until it's sort of like a shell of itself, you know?
Oh, they definitely killed Wolverine.
Yeah. Well, I actually haven't been reading the X-Men at all. Is Wolverine dead in the books? I guess he is. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
He's back now.
Is he? No. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, but shocking. that bit with him, you know, hanging himself and coming back as a zombie was, it seemed to me like very much to be sort of a dig at corporations as a whole, as like, we've got a product and we're just going to keep it going. And then also underneath that sort of characters who are, you know, just have worn out their welcome and we're just, you know, or are beyond, you know, not relevant to the time that they're in. And we're just going to just keep them going. Just, you know,
it's
just keep it going.
Really good. Like that's what the point was. It's really, really clever. Honestly, yeah. I totally glossed over that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of like really neat stuff like that. Like I really love the bit. There's a bit here with like a police officer who is who's like an abusive police officer. And they sort of like have a run-in with him and they sort of save him. And do they bring him back from the dead? I don't know exactly what it is.
Oh,
but
so he gets infected with this.
Yeah.
With this thing that starts making him into this mecha robot thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they actually save him from it and extract the thing from him. So he's back to like being human.
Yeah.
But they leave him with the, like, all the people that he's been terrorizing, not realizing that. So, you know,
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the setup too, like, you know, it opens with him, you know, last day before retirement, and, you know, and then you see he's just messing around. He's just terrible. He's just a horrible human being. Yeah. And, you know, so I love that sort of playing with that little stereotype and that trope.
Yeah, that was really neat too. It's like my last day and nothing can go wrong on my last day. And it basically ends up being sort of like the worst day of this police officer's life.
Well, and because usually that trope is, but usually that trope is like, oh, he's a retiring police officer. Like, everybody loves him. He's like, you know, he's a great member of the community. But this guy's just a terrible human being. And so it's like, it totally subverts that.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention were the soldiers being sort of like plant people that any of the heroes could basically do whatever they wanted to them.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
That very much was like, oh yeah, these are, you know, we didn't want to go with robots, so they're plant people. You can kill and distinguish, you know, without worrying about it, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think it's funny too because of the writing, like Warren Ellis, Garth Ennis. There's sort of guys like that. There's a couple other writers who, how do I put it? When they're sort of like creating things, they're very much like tossing like several words together, and it sounds like genius because it's like never been sort of done before. You know what I'm saying? Like the particle electron reality modifier. You know what I mean? And there's stuff like that in this book where it's just like, it's like, oh, really? You know what I mean? It's done in books like this, and people are like so impressed by that. But to me, I'm just like, no, they just threw like four words together that don't belong, and they made it a thing, and now you think that's like really smart or super awesome, you know what I mean? And
it's like what Stan Lee used to do.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, in a way, but it's really funny because like there's a lot of that in here, and in a way, I think he's sort of like making fun of himself and the writers that do that, you know what I mean? Because particularly in the 90s, like when these guys were coming up, you know, it would be like the interdimensional quantum black hole duplicator thing. You know what I mean? And people would just be like, oh, my God, that sounds so smart. Like that's just so smart. Like I think that guy's really smart. He's a futurist. Like he thinks about these things and they're amazing. And I'm just like, yeah, OK, I'm not going to deny that Warren Ellis is smarter than I'll ever be, you know what I mean? But there's definitely a bit of that where it's just like just throwing words in a blender and making it sound like smart. And there's a lot of that in here that I loved that I was just like, okay, it's that sort of like Star Trek aspect, you know, to the writing where I was just like, oh, that's so much fun. The other thing that I really loved are the sort of like, and I was wondering if they were sort of trying to make fun of like Lilo and Stitch a little bit because they have these flying koala bears, these blue koala bears, and they're blue and they have like the pink ears. And I'm like, that looked, and they have the giant sharp teeth. And I was like, at first I had to blink a couple of times, and obviously, you know, Marvel's owned by Disney now, so, you know, nothing to worry about. But I was like, what is going on here? They're fighting like Stitch clones. You know, I love that. Yeah, see, like here, they're talking about the guys with the pterodactyl armor, and here, excellent. Give the drop order to the assault petrosuit flock. I'm like, okay, like it's just so kind of like brilliantly put together. And then the next page, you see, it's like a giant flock of men dressed up in pterodactyl, you know, suits, you know,
right.
That definitely to me is just like him, you know, like riffing and just like almost like stream of conscious. Like he just sat down one day and he's like, okay, what are weird weapons? And he just was like brainstorming, and it's like, he just, okay, that and just smash them together. And
Yeah. Actually, this whole issue, I'm trying to flip through, which issue is this? This whole issue, chapter five, issue five is full of like awesome stuff like that, like the samurai robots. What do they call them?
Yeah, that's kind of why I think it really was, you know, really is sort of a like a highlight for the artist, because he's just giving him these crazy things to draw, and it's like, okay, yeah. And now fight for 5 pages. Like, it's just, you know, it's just like, let him go bonkers. And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of like really neat sort of dialogue. Like, here, it's the gamma activated bullmen from beyond the 19th perimeter, and they're right. Naked. Like, you know, it's just like, it's like, what is that? Like, that's, you just threw some words together. You know what I mean?
Right.
And but it's an aspect of the writing that in this, like, I love, but in something like The Authority or other books like that, it sort of like reeks of a bit of pretentiousness, you know, and, yeah. And I feel like this is very much, you know, as the British say, like taking the piss out of that sort of thing. As brilliant as it sounds and as fun as it is in this book, you know, it's very much like, come on, we can all just like make up phrases, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, as a whole, I mean, I just think that this series is, you know, pretty excellent. I mean, by the end of the book, you are sort of facing off against, you know, authority stand-ins, I believe, right? They sort of like meet up and they sort of each have their own like little episode of like their own like little, like the bit with Machine Man where he's like working in an office.
Oh, that where they're doing that like hallucination thing?
Yeah, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That was funny. I mean, that bit was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And Bloodstone is like Stuart Immonen gets to draw like Mike Mignola.
Yeah, I was wondering if I forgot about that, but I was wondering if anyone else noticed that, because it really did look like Mike.
Hell yeah! How could you not notice it? It's so great. But it's funny because it's like, it really is like, I just keep going back to it, particularly Stuart Immonen. It really seemed like this was a chance for him to just like jam and be free. You know what I mean? I mean, the design of like the giant State 51, the Beyond Corporation's floating terror factory. I mean, that just looks great. Like, and it just, it seems like I don't know if Warren Ellis and Stuart Immonen were friends before this, but it just seems like Warren Ellis was like, hey man, I'm just going to give you some crazy stuff to draw, you know, have fun. And Immonen just went with it. And he does like an amazing job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's just such a blast. And it's so, I mean, just, he does such a great job of taking these like absolutely bonkers things and just executing it. And the stylistic shifts he takes, especially in that issue you mentioned there with the Forbush Man hallucinations, you know, which it was crazy. You know, that's a character I've only heard of. I've never actually read a comic with him.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
And the whole like Avengers sort of like, you know, the faux Avengers team there that he's on, and the fake Hulk and the others there. And then he's just throwing, you know, it's just like throwing concepts on the wall, and just like as quickly as they show up, they're thrown away. Like the other two super teams, which I still don't even remember their names. Like, and they were just, you know, one of them had like some sort of church theme, and I don't remember the other one, but they're, you know, they're all designed just like crazy. And then it's just like, and they're beaten and moving on, you know, they're just bursting with ideas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because I, you know, as far as like the humor goes, I don't think that this book ever like really made me laugh out loud. But I mean, I smiled while I was reading the whole thing, but nothing made me happier than when you get to the final issue. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you've got the baby MODOK, and then the villain is revealed and it's Devil Dinosaur, and he's wearing like a smoking jacket sort of thing with like an ascot scarf, and he's drinking like a glass of champagne, and he's basically like monologuing and revealing his plot. And like, that to me was just like, all right, you nailed it. Like, that's like a 10 point landing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I don't know what you were building up to, but like the baby MODOK, that I thought was the topper. And then once they got to like Devil Dinosaur at the end, I was just like, oh, this is like some sort of LSD Marvel fever dream. Like, I don't even know what's happening, but I love it, you know?
Some of the things I was wondering, like, I'm not familiar with Devil Dinosaur before this. So there are certain things where I was wondering, I was just like, did they just want to do, like, a serious book and were told no? So they're like, well, we can't get the Avengers, so we'll do next wave. We'll get these, you know, B-list characters. And then we want to do it, you know, against... you know, what's it called? The people who fight the Avengers. Oh, damn, can't remember the name right now. And they're like, no.
Masters of Evil?
Whoever, you know, and they're like, well,
whoever, it doesn't matter who the Avengers
are. Let's do the, and he's like, I want to do the Red Skull. And they're like, no, he's, you know, he's dead right now or whatever. And they're like, all right, fine. So we can't get anyone we want, so we'll just do all these crazy characters kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely had that feeling to it. I don't know if that's really what happened, but there definitely had that feeling to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was, you're probably right that there was a little bit of that in there, but I also think that they were smart enough to know, like, look, they would never let us do this to like the Red Skull or whatever. So like, let's use Devil Dinosaur. Like, why not use sort of like the most crazy, obscure villains that you can find, and he's not necessarily a villain, but characters, and that is some crazy obscure character, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, there's
sure.
Not a lot of people probably reading this book that might have known who Devil Dinosaur was, you know, but in a way too, I feel like this was a book that sort of was made for fans, right? I mean, you would sort of have to get some of the in jokes, correct?
Yeah, I mean, even the visual cues, I mean, of all these, you know, there's one page where all the little background villains that they're fighting are all like X-Men themed, but it's never, one acknowledges it. It's like, oh, these are all like little Wolverine apes or something like that. And then there's
the giant Cyclops, Brontosaurus or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, this is just reveling in the Marvel Universe and just going. It's like, you know, the kid who, like, you're playing in the playground as a kid, and then this kid just runs in and grabs everybody's toys and starts throwing them around, and he's like, hey, let's do this and let's do that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, he's just having a blast. The Devil Dinosaur thing, I mean, I think I did laugh out loud. Like, it was just such a surprise for me. Like, just like, I actually read the original Jack Kirby Devil Dinosaur series probably within the last year.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, so it was, I mean, he doesn't talk, like, there's no reason that any of that could have happened, but it was still a blast.
Oh, well, there's definitely some things where they took liberties. There's a character, I'm totally going to forget the guy's name. He has a flaming head. He's, like, from the other dimension.
Dormammu?
Oh, yeah, Dormammu, yeah.
Yeah,
They changed his name. It's, like, it's not Dormammu, it's the other guy.
That's why I forgot his name. It wasn't Dormammu, it was the other...
It was sort of like his stand-in in the series.
I remember when that came out, I thought it was hilarious, but a friend of mine who is really into comics got all pissy about it because he was like, you can't just put that fire out with some water and like put it in the toilet. Like, yeah, you're not getting the joke, but like,
have to say that the reason that I probably, when I first read this, the first issue, I probably took my comics like way too seriously at the time. So, you know, and it's funny that reading it now, like, I get it, and it, you know, it makes me smile. I wouldn't say this was like my favorite sort of like humor themed, you know, comic that I've read or anything like that. But I did have a lot of fun, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's funny to me how much my sort of reading habits have evolved. And to see that, you know, again, going back to Squirrel Girl, this is sort of very much an influence to that. And how many fans are still so kind of like stuck in that thinking that I was probably stuck in 10, 11 years ago, where comics had to be serious and that Squirrel Girl book shouldn't be taken, you know, as canon or anything. You know what I mean? And I don't know what that is. Is that growth? Is that maturity? Is that development? Like, I don't know. Or, you know, I'm not saying that I'm a mature adult. I mean, I'm old, but I am saying that it's just funny how much I sort of give less of a crap about like continuity and the way things are like supposed to be. And it's become more of like, I just enjoy reading a fun story. You know what I mean? I think
there's definitely, ironically, because this is not a very mature story in a lot of ways, but there's, I think, definitely both a maturity and immaturity to being able to like be okay with that kind of thing, because, you know, comics, it's like, you know, I mean, they are characters and there is continuity, but then, you know, story kind of is more important. Like, you want to tell a good story, and being able to and not even like throw it all out the window, just kind of loosen the reins a little and just be okay with it, just because it works better for that, you know? And I think there's a maturity there to be like, yeah, that's fine. Like, it doesn't we don't have to be slavishly, you know, following these things that have gone on for, you know, 60 years and have so much baggage. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because Monica Rambeau is like, you know, the leader of this group and stuff like that. And I would imagine that he pulled her because she's somewhat obscure. I mean, she's probably maybe the least used or least popular sort of character named Captain Marvel that there's ever sort of been.
Didn't even know she was Captain Marvel.
Yeah, she was Captain Marvel at some point. But the thing of it is that for me personally, I mean, she was the leader of the Avengers when I was reading that book for a while. Like, I think Tom Palmer was doing the inks or the art. And I really liked those issues. That was a team of Avengers who was like falling apart. She was having a hard time like keeping them together. And I don't know. I think Dr. Druid took over or, you know, leadership after she left or something. I don't know, but it was in the 80s. And I remember really like being a kid and thinking it was cool that a woman was leading the Avengers and that it was cool that a black woman was like Captain Marvel, you know what I mean, at the time. And so it was a character that I did like sort of like deep in my mind have kind of an affection for. And then, you know, throughout the years, they just didn't know what to do with her, you know, and so she got jettisoned. And so to see her like in this series, it's fun and stuff like that. And I really like it, but it's a very sort of like different spin, you know, than the character that I knew. But it's not so jarring. I mean, again, it was the 80s. I was a teenager. You know, it's a very different take, but she's also still a strong character. There's a lot of like, you know, uses of her power that I think are really great. Like when she flashes like a ship with like X-rays or something. And she's like, I just gave you a little dose. She's like, if you don't do, you know, what I want, I'm going to flash you with the lethal dose. And again, Warren Ellis is really good with sort of going outside of the box of like what, you know, certain heroes can do. And I was like, why didn't anybody else ever think of like Captain Marvel, of her being able to do that? Because that's sort of her powers.
Well, I mean, like, that's kind of the way some things, you know, that's the way comics have developed. I mean, you know, it used to be the Fantastic Four, like Sue was the least powerful of the group.
Yeah.
And then they were like, wait a second. We gave her all, we didn't even realize this, but she could be the most powerful.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And I just think that, it's just funny how, and I guess I have to ask you guys about the captain in this book. Like, what did you guys think about that character? Because I mean, I thought he was hysterical, but I kept trying to think of like, is it just making a commentary on like how many comic book characters are just called the captain? Captain this, Captain that, because he even goes into a monologue at one point, like where, you know, I tried Captain Universe, but somebody was named that. And then I was the captain, you know what I mean? And there actually was a character called the captain, which was, I believe it was, what's his name? John Walker, the guy that takes over Captain America for a while and goes insane. And then he takes on the black suit. I think he just called himself the captain for a while. So, but what did you guys think about that guy? Because that was sort of like an ambiguous, I was wondering if he was just made up for this series.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely new. This is definitely his first appearance, but I kept thinking, like, he, you know, because the rest of the team is our pre-existing characters, I initially assumed he was too, and I was trying to figure out who he was. And I mean, it turns out he's a brand new character. But then I started wondering. Well, I started to wonder, is like, is he supposed? What was he just like? Originally, as written, was a character, and then Marvel said, well, you can't use him, and so they just said, well, we'll just call him the Captain, and he's a new character. You know, yeah. So I'm wondering if in a version of the script it was a pre-existing character, but I can't figure out who that would have been. Like Wonder Man? I mean, I have no idea. But but yeah, he was funny. I mean, he was definitely like pathetic, even though he was very powerful. You know, that's kind of the central theme, I think, of all of them, is like all of the characters have a big like self-esteem issue and are kind of like losers, even though they actually are very powerful. I mean, they actually don't have all that much trouble defeating the villains throughout the entire series.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're all actually pretty capable, you know, but for whatever reason, they're just sort of like these D-list people that nobody thinks about. And so, you know, he certainly plays into that, where he's just this pathetic guy that everyone kind of makes fun of, which is kind of funny.
He's great. I like that character a lot because he is so pathetic, and he's at the same time like the most powerful, I think, in the whole group, possibly. But yeah, he's just like this sad, you know, drunk guy.
Yeah, who doesn't know his place. Well, I mean, part of the reason that I bring the Captain up is because there's a little bit later a bit about like Captain America, and they mention they show Captain America every once in a while, and Captain Marvel mentions him, and I'm wondering, do you get a sense while reading this book that this is sort of like Warren Ellis like reined in a bit? Because I feel like while I'm reading the book, as fun and crazy as it is, I feel like there might have been sort of like a more adult or like edgy Warren Ellis kind of like screaming to want to get out of this book. And maybe that's why he only did 12 issues. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I mean, I definitely feel like basically anytime there is an analog of a character rather than the actual character, like Dormammu or Nick Fury, like, I felt like Marvel kind of pulling back, like, this is great, we love it, but it cannot be this character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, and the Captain again, I just have to assume that it was another character that was pre-existing. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if there were concepts in here that they kind of pulled back on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the feeling I got while I was reading it. I felt like this is sort of like Warren Ellis constrained, you know, living within the Marvel universe.
Well, definitely living within the Marvel universe, definitely living within the code. But I think, I don't know if it was necessarily like restrained in the sense of like, how can I put this?
Censored?
I don't think necessarily censored. I think it was more like, this is the sandbox you can play in, but we're going to push the edges of this a bit, you know, and splash a little over the edge, but, you know, still not too far kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, he's been in the industry long enough to know what he can, you know, he likes to push the edges, but he realizes that, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a corporate owned properties that he's playing with. And I think he got away with quite a bit. And so I think, you know, what he did get out was you know, worth it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, again, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, maybe it's because I've read a lot of his other stuff and it goes to places that I'm like, whoa, hey, you know? And, I mean, he's playing within, like you said, a little bit of a corporate sandbox. So he has to maybe rein himself in. But maybe, you know, not knowing that it was Warren Ellis, if it had been another writer, would I feel the same way? I don't know. You know, maybe not, you know, just so I just figured I would bring that up because the captain to me seems like he really wanted it to be like a different character or yeah. sort of like a stand in for somebody, maybe Captain America, like a Superman type character or something like that.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem, right? Because like the captain is so powerful, he doesn't fit Captain America. Otherwise, he's otherwise you'd be like, yeah, this is Captain America because he's the captain, you know, named like he's named the captain, but he's a loser, but he's like the all American, you know, guy, but he's, you know, but he's so strong and powerful that he doesn't fit that, you know, that mold kind of thing. So I was thinking like maybe Thor, but that doesn't fit either. Like,
yeah, just, no.
Even his origin didn't feel like, you know, an analog to anything. Like the aliens giving him.
I mean, oh yeah. Maybe the greatest American hero.
Maybe Captain Marvel, like Marvel, you know, whatever.
Could be.
Maybe, but not.
Now that I think of it, yeah, the greatest American hero is the thing that stands out to me the most when you say like,
I don't know the
aliens.
Greatest American hero.
Oh, Leah, you missed out on some great TV when you were a kid. Come on now.
No, you know, actually, the one that reminds me of the most is Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. That's a good, yeah, I mean, it's kind of basically, that's kind of what the greatest American hero is a bit of a spoof of. So, but yeah, so any final thoughts on Next Wave? Before we sign off for this episode,
it was a blast.
Yeah, definitely worth a read.
Yeah. I really liked it a lot. I'm glad that it's available on the Marvel, you know, app because it is a bit hard to track down trades that are reasonably priced online. It's kind of crazy. I don't know if this book has kind of gone out of print. I got lucky and found one at a good
maybe
price.
I mean, look at reselling my individuals.
eBay. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I will tell you this, you know, the trade itself is like $35. I did not pay that for mine, but it's like, you know, it's not even a hardcover. So part of me that's like, holy cow, like, damn, $35 for this? You know, I feel that there was a time where Marvel was maybe overcharging for trades. You know, I'm not going to say that. I don't think that's going on so much anymore. But there was a time where I was like picking up a trade from Marvel and I was like, damn, you really want me to buy those single issues, huh? Mm-hmm. You know?
Interesting.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. But yeah, no, if you are interested in Next Wave, I would recommend it. I think it is a really fun read. It's probably similar to a lot of stuff that's going on now. But, you know, at the time, like you guys said, it was probably and somebody said that to me on Facebook. They were like, look, it's probably going to seem a little old hat to you. But when it came out, it was like amazing. And yep. So I probably missed out on the amazing when it first came out because I only read one issue. But I will say that on this read that I really enjoyed it. And you know, visually it's freaking terrific. And it's good for, you know, a chuckle and a laugh, especially if you don't take your superheroes too seriously, like I probably did in 2009 or whenever this came out. But well, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Book Club episode of Next Wave, published by Marvel Comics, written by Warren Ellis, illustrated by Stuart Immonen. My name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with my good friends, Corey Blake and Liad Goldberg. Thank you for listening. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Bye. Part-Time Fanboy.